This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are going to discuss the top stories in state and national politics this hour with two guests from opposing perspectives, from the very latest in the race for president to the controversial writings unveiled this week by Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley while she was in college. And we will welcome the other stories that you want to talk about at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. We have with us Rick Essenberg, President and General Counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, also a blogger at sharkandshepherd.blogspot.com. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Scott Ross is with us, the executive director of One Wisconsin Now. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Professor Essenberg.
Well, let's start with the Supreme Court candidate and Justice Rebecca Bradley. Scott Ross at One Wisconsin Now, you found these controversial writings of then college student, Marquette College student Rebecca Bradley. How did you find out about this?
Well, we at One Wisconsin Now, we look into, we care about a judiciary that's fair, impartial, and unbiased. And part of our work, we often review, the decisions that judges, that justices make. We research their decisions. We research their writings, both on the court and beyond. And so we had been looking into a lot of the statements over the years that Justice Bradley had made. And we actually got a tip. Somebody said, hey, I was a student down at Marquette, and I remember her doing something, and you might want to take a look at the newspapers. And so we trucked down to the Wisconsin Historical Society and scoured the Marquette Tribune and some other publications, and we just found some things that horrified us.
Oh, so this Justice Rebecca Bradley wrote in college 24 years ago columns that referred to homosexuals as queers and degenerates, and said that gay and drug-addicted AIDS victims basically commit suicide through their behavior and don't receive her empathy. Bradley apologized this week for her remarks, and she says she does not feel that way today. Scott, you are still calling on Bradley to resign over these writings. Don't you think that people can change their attitudes and change their beliefs?
Oh, I absolutely think so. I mean, listen, nobody more than me knows that, the mistakes of the past, you can change them in the future. But what I can say is this, is that she's sorry that she got caught. She had no record of supporting the rights of LGBT individuals over the last 24 years. The writings were so hateful, the spite so apparent. And the fact that, how can any LGBT person that comes before the court and sees her sitting on the bench think that they're going to get what they deserve, which is an unbiased and impartial jurist? And in fact, there are so many different areas of the law that have expanded as a result of what has happened and where LGBT rights have gone. So I think that that's, a lot of concerns that folks have over this, and certainly we do.
So, Rick, what's your reaction to these college writings of Bradley's and whether they're relevant today?
Well, I think we should take a deep breath, and it's really interesting for me to hear that, Scott scoured the earth, and the best thing that he could come up with was something that Rebecca Bradley wrote a quarter of a century ago when she was 21 years old. And, I think that she has done something that political candidates rarely do. She hasn't made excuses. She could have. There were things going on in her life at the time. She had lost someone close to her who had contracted AIDS as a result of a blood transfusion. But she didn't make excuses for herself. She said, look, I was wrong. I'm embarrassed and I'm mortified by what I wrote. It doesn't reflect my views today. And we do know that it doesn't reflect her views today. Look, I know Rebecca Bradley. I've known her for 9 years. I've never seen a hint of this type of attitude from her. I've attended, Scott asks, well, how can any a gay or lesbian person know that she would be fair? Well, I've attended fundraisers for Rebecca Bradley in the home of Andy Neunemacher, a prominent gay businessman in the city of Milwaukee, who still supports her. I know that gay and lesbian couples have petitioned for adoptions before her in children's court, and she has approved those petitions for adoption. You know, I think the people are tired with these type of smear tactics. They're tired of, you know, this gotcha politics. If Rebecca Bradley was a progressive, I don't think Scott would be falling over himself to argue that, yes, she's changed. Yes, people change. People grow. People learn. I think it's time for us to talk about the issues in this campaign and, you know, not, you know, sort of play this game of smear politics and hit politics. I think people are tired of this stuff.
Well, Scott?
Well, just a couple things. And, you know, obviously, as Professor Essenberg says, these writings were 24 years ago. But I'd like to point out that Rebecca Bradley's own television ads say that she had 20 years of law experience. So 20 years of it, so going back 20 years to her law career is okay, but going back a couple more years is not okay. And I think the fact is that when it comes to Rebecca Bradley, she has been dishonest about this issue. And she has been dishonest about what she did. She didn't put the fact that that she had been a writer for the Marquette Tribune and a columnist in her application. If you look at her application, she notes right underneath where she would have put that she was the editor-in-chief of her high school newspaper. So it's very clear that she deliberately tried to prevent the public from knowing that she had written these things. And I think that that's the thing that makes people really, you know, the language is terrible. But I also think that her views have not evolved on a lot of things. And, you know, we know that just, you know, a few years ago, she wrote a column that compared contraception to murder. And so her views have not changed. And let me just say that when her initial reaction to our unveiling her homophobic, hateful writings was to say that she was responding to the election of Bill Clinton, which was in November of 1992. Some of the most disgusting things that she wrote regarding gay people happened 9 months earlier. And when she was called out on it, she wrote even more disgusting things.
And Rick, Governor Walker said he wasn't aware of these writings. In the vetting process for his appointment, should he have been?
You know, I don't know if he should have been. I think that finding something like this would be very, very difficult. It was really sort of pre-internet era. But, you know, the idea that, you know, we have to remember everything that we ever did a quarter of a century ago and disclose it, and that if it ever turns out that we said something, you know, mean, nasty, or that this is going to mark us forever, and that nothing we do and that nothing we say, and no matter how we live our life since then, can ever make a difference. It's a perspective and a point of view that I find extremely troubling. You know, it's interesting. Joanne Kloppenburg made an appearance recently, and she said something I actually agreed with. Well, she was wrong. She said that Abraham Lincoln had owned slaves, but yet signed the Emancipation Proclamation. And this showed how incredibly complex every person is and how they can grow. Now, she's wrong. Abraham Lincoln never owned slaves. And it's unfortunate that when it comes to her own personal interest, political ambition, she can't show the same grace and understanding toward her opponent that, you know, hopefully she holds generally. But, you know, I think that this is something that people are tired of. You know, people are tired of this idea that if I can find something in your background, no matter how long ago, no matter what the context, no matter what the circumstances, that you are forever marred and you're a bad person. You know, I know Rebecca Bradley really well. She's a wonderful and a decent person. I don't know Joanne Kloppenburg, but, you know, I'm going to presume that she is, too. These two women disagree on the issues. That's what we should be talking about. We shouldn't be engaged in this type of politics of personal destruction and attempt to demonize and make monsters out of the people that we oppose politically.
All right, what about that point, Scott?
Well, let me just say that, you know, first of all, Rebecca Bradley was the one who was supposed to disclose this. But let's not kid for one second. Let us not kid for one second that this was anything than what it was, which is Governor Walker has appointed Rebecca Bradley 3 times over 3 years to 3 judicial appointments. It's never happened before. She is a creature of the Republican machine. She's a part of the Federalist Society. Her campaign chair for her one election was Governor Walker's campaign chair, Michael Grebe, probably the most powerful Republican in the state of Wisconsin who runs the Bradley Foundation. And if you want to talk about the politics involved in this, I need only look at, you know, Professor Essenberg's letter of recommendation for Rebecca Bradley to get her first her judgeship in 2012, in which he said, "Finally, I fully understand that any governor will be concerned about the political viability of a potential appointee. Rebecca is well respected in the Milwaukee legal community and can expect to receive the strong support of conservatives. She has paid her dues. That will not be ignored." The politics of this are obvious. Governor Walker knew what was going on. His oldest advisor in the world sat on the student government with Rebecca Bradley 6 months before all of this happened. Rebecca Bradley's house is 10 doors down from Governor Walker's. There is no way that Governor Walker didn't know about this.
Well, you know, I understand. I agree with you, Scott. This is about politics. And the politics is that you don't like Rebecca Bradley's judicial philosophy, and you're going to do everything you can to destroy her. And I understand that, you know, that's something that people do. But you and I think have a different philosophy. I mean, you look at your Twitter feed, it's full of vulgarities and obscenities and F-bombs directed at people that you disagree with. I don't think that that's the kind of political discourse that we want in this state. I think we want to talk about the issues. I don't think that we want to turn our opponents into monsters. I think it's time to move beyond this and you know, talk about whether or not we want someone like Joanne Kloppenburg on the court or someone like Rebecca Bradley.
And we will, but let me bring up another big story that at least was making headlines yesterday. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported yesterday that as a private attorney, Bradley represented in a child placement case the former chief operating officer of the law firm where both had previously worked and with whom she acknowledged having an extramarital affair with. But Bradley's ex-husband called the Journal Sentinel's headline, Bradley extramarital affair role in child placement surface, as being false and malicious and despicable. He said the two were separated at the time of Bradley's so-called affair. Conservatives are very upset with the Journal Sentinel for their coverage of this issue. Rick, what's your take on this?
You know, it's just more of the same thing. I mean, this is one of the most vile and disgusting attack campaigns against anybody that I've seen in Wisconsin politics. You know, Rebecca Bradley had separated from her husband. Their marriage was over. She was, they weren't divorced yet, but their marriage was over. And what she did, we normally wouldn't refer to as an extramarital affair. We would call it dating. She represented a man that she was seeing at the time. There was a motion that was brought before Judge Bourne in Waukesha County to claim that this was somehow improper, and Judge Bourne rejected it because it wasn't. All of us who are lawyers sometimes represent friends and family members in a pinch. And I think that this is just another example of people taking this stuff too far. We should be talking about the issues. We shouldn't be trying to turn good people into bad people in order for us to, you know, gain some kind of political advantage and win a victory.
So we should be talking about the issues, not about you know, personal attacks like this.
Absolutely, 100%. I could not agree with Professor Essenberg more. But every single thing that has been raised in Rebecca Bradley's writings, whether it's the rights of LGBT people, whether it's about people accessing contraception and the right to choose and women having decisions over their lives, the fact that she wrote, you know, about the legitimacy of women having a responsibility in date rape, these are all issues. And just because Rebecca Bradley's views on them are so far out of the mainstream that I can't think of anybody who has defended her views so far, it doesn't mean we're not talking about issues. And these are issues which come before the court in Wisconsin, in courts in Wisconsin every single day. And it's very clear that when it came to this particular thing and her imbroglio, that she exercised incredibly poor judgment. I mean, it's, you know, the court records show that Bradley had out of court contact with the minor child at issue in this case. And the child's guardian ad litem argued that Bradley's involvement in the case would, quote, ethically preclude her from acting as counsel in the case. It's very simple. These are about issues. These are about her judgments. Professor Essenberg and his pals on the right and there are many of them, because I know, because they are blowing up my Twitter feed, Rick, but it doesn't mean that because you're talking about the issues, you're not talking about the issues.
We're going to take a short pause, and then we have many callers who also want to talk about this issue. We'll spend another few minutes on it and then move on to some other issues, including the latest in the presidential race and more. By the way, Justice Bradley and her opponent, Appeals Court Judge Joanne Kloppenburg, will debate a week from tonight. That's Friday, March 18th at 7 p.m. It will be televised on Wisconsin Public Television and broadcast live on Wisconsin Public Radio as well. It is our joint debate with both candidates next week at 7 p.m. We are also planning on talking to the two candidates on the Monday after the debate during our state capitol report. Judge Kloppenburg has confirmed. We have not yet heard back from Justice Bradley. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Talking with Scott Ross, the executive director of One Wisconsin Now, and Rick Essenberg, president and general counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, about the top issues in state and national politics this week. And we are welcoming your input. What issue in the news do you want to talk about? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take some calls on this controversy involving Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley. Kelly in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, or maybe my comment is, I was also in college in 1992. And in college, I take offense to that was just a part of her youth. She was in college. She was preparing to become a lawyer, preparing to become a judge, just as I was preparing to be a part of my profession as well. So we can't discount the time that these writings happened. This was shaping who she was going to be in her career. And so I don't want this to seem like or to be taken like this was just something she did in high school or in junior year or in her junior high. It wasn't. This was who she was going to become as a professional lawyer and judge.
Rick?
Yeah, I disagree with that. I think that people change. People grow. You know, Robert Byrd used to be a member of the Ku Klux Klan. The Democrats made him their Senate Majority Leader for many, many years. He changed. I think that when we're young, we have a tendency to think that we have the world figured out and that everybody that disagrees with us is misbegotten. And as we live and we learn, we find out that everything wasn't as simple as we thought it was. And again, I'll tell you, Justice Bradley has presided over adoptions by gay and lesbian persons. She had reputation, even among her political opponents, as being very compassionate and empathic when she served on Children's Court. She is supported by prominent gay and lesbian conservatives and the city of Milwaukee. And if Scott wants to talk about the issues, and we can do that. I mean, he referred to the article that she wrote in which she defended the religious liberty of pharmacists who didn't want to fill certain types of prescriptions. If Scott wants to debate that, we can debate that. That's an issue. But I think to say that because somebody a quarter of a century ago wrote a column that nasty and unthoughtful and arrogant, that they're forever marked by this and this forever defines them, I think that's wrong. That's not the kind of world I want to live in. I hope it's not the kind of world that Scott wants to live in.
Scott.
Well, I'd just say, she's taking credit for 20 years of her experience, just not years 22 through 24. I think this is the thing, is that Rebecca Bradley, throughout the time since she first announced that she was a candidate for Supreme Court, and then Governor Walker conveniently appointed her for the third time in 3 years to the highest court in our state, she has been asked about issues over and over and over again. And Rick, if you can find me a place where she articulates her position on an issue, I'll buy you a steak dinner. because all she's done is say, I'll interpret the law as they are, not as I would like them. And my personal feelings have nothing to do with it. But there is this record of things that she has said, and is not just going back to right before she went to law school. It's things that she wrote, like equating contraception to murder, like the fact that she said judges should be able to lie in their campaigns. I mean, how can you believe a thing she says in the face of this storm that she says she's changed, when she wrote just a few years ago that judges should be able to lie in political campaigns?
Let me ask you, Scott, how is what Justice Bradley wrote 24 years ago and now says she changed her mind any different than President Obama saying he evolved on the issue of gay marriage? He used to be against legalizing same-sex marriage, and then he changed his mind.
Well, I think that you can take that statement. President Obama was opposed to gay marriage. He now supports gay marriage. And put that on one side of the wall, and then on the other side of the wall, put all of the writings that we have shown of Rebecca Bradley, and you tell me if that's a moral equivalency.
Scott, you're distorting what she wrote. She did not say it was all right for judges to lie in political campaigns. She was objecting to a bar commission that wanted to arrogate it to itself the right to decide what could and couldn't be said in judicial campaigns. She said that there is a provision in the Judicial Code of Ethics that already governs what people can say in campaigns. It's one thing to talk about the issues. It's another thing to distort and misdescribe what people have said. I think we should be honest and we should be fair-minded about the views of others before we begin to attack.
You know what? And I'll tell you what, Professor, I will not ask Rebecca Bradley to apologize for saying that judges should be able to lie in campaigns, but I would like her to apologize for saying that victims of sexual assault somehow have something to do with their attack.
Didn't she apologize?
She never apologized for the comments about sexual assault. She refused to address it. And you go to Wisconsin Eye and look at her press after the Bar Association the other day, and you will see her asked specifically, will you apologize, for instance, for that? She says no. She was even asked, will you apologize for referring to abortion as the, you know, will you apologize to Jewish people for referring to abortion as a Holocaust? And she refused and walked away. Her aide pulled her away, and she refused to answer the question.
Let's go to Kate in Milwaukee. Hello, Kate.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I think this is such an important education for your listening public, and most importantly for the voting public, because I think the distinction has to be made between when you're trying to make a comparison between with the David Duke comment and with the Obama comment, what you are asking a justice on the Supreme Court of Wisconsin to do, and the highest court to do, is to decide controversies as a check to those other branches of government, right? So what is most important here is the integrity of the people on that bench and the representation that they make in the way, in their demeanor and in their analysis of the cases and the people in front of them, to be unbiased. And so it's not the same thing. Painting with this broad brush and what we've done to jurists all over the place when they are trying to do a good job of making them politicians, it has been incredibly damaging to the justice system in every way and in every shape. And I, as an attorney myself, I need to know that the person that's going to be deciding this controversy, because it's a controversy because it's complicated, it's gray, and my interpretation of the law is different than my opposing counsel's interpretation of the law, and I have to be able to count on the unbiased, you know, reference of the jurist on that bench in making a legal analysis that's going to be.
Yeah. So, can you rep, Kate? So, then your main point is then regarding Justice Bradley.
I think that this is a question of integrity, and I completely agree that we have to go into this. And it's not just because we're being politically slamming; it's because what she has written does demonstrate, as the previous caller made, even though I think it is true. Of course, people change. I agree with that. But in this case, when we're talking about a politician as a legislator, it's very different than a forced politician trying to be a Supreme Court justice.
All right. Rick, you start.
Well, you know, I think there's an important point there, and it goes back, I think, to something that Scott said. He said, well, you know, Rebecca Bradley isn't saying what her position is on a variety of political issues. And that doesn't surprise me, because this isn't a race for legislator. It isn't a race for governor. It's a race for the Supreme Court. And one of the differences between judicial conservatives and judicial liberals is judicial conservatives believe that they tend to be textualists, they tend to be originalists. They tend to believe that it's inappropriate to modify, expand, and change the law in order to achieve some political objective that you want. And so she has addressed the issues that she sees them, and the issues are she's a textualist, she's an originalist, she doesn't believe that the courts are a vehicle for making policy, the legislature is a vehicle for making policy. Now, the caller is right that in doing that, it's important to know that a judge will act without bias toward parties. And I can tell you that she has unreservedly apologized for what she wrote a quarter of a century ago. There's really no indication that she's ever demonstrated that type of bias since then. Disagreeing with Scott Ross on political issues is not bias. She is supported by prominent members of the gay and lesbian community in Milwaukee, people who know her, as Scott does not. And she has presided in children's court, and she's approved the adoption petitions of gay and lesbian couples. She's, by all counts, acted with compassion and empathy and in fairness, and I think people can be very comfortable with her as a member of the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Scott.
Well, I'd say this. I applaud Professor Essenberg offering up the "some of my best friends are gay" defense. I do not believe she has unreservedly apologized for any of these things. But I will say this, and this is going to be a shameless piece of self-promotion. I'm going to be on public television Here and Now this week. And I went back and I looked at when Rebecca Bradley was on Here and Now. And Frederica Freiberg asked her, "Is there an example of an impartial decision on your part that went against your politics?" Rebecca Bradley: "I can't think of a decision like that." So you know what she's written. You know how she's going to decide. It's up to you to make a decision whether or not you want to vote for or vote against. I don't care. I hope everybody just participates in the elections. But I also think that it is critically important that we remember that when it came to doing her job, when Rebecca Bradley got the job from Governor Walker, the third appointment in 3 years, to the Supreme Court, she has had 8 days of oral arguments on the court. And what did she do one of those days? Well, she cut out to take a walk down the street to go genuflect before Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, which has spent $10 million to get a conservative Supreme Court. And what did she say at that when she ducked down on her job? She said, "I am your public servant."
We have to wrap up because we have a lot more news to review for the Week in Review. But I'm going to have you both just final comments on this story and its impact on the race for state Supreme Court justice. How significant do you think, Scott Ross, your reporting is going to be in the race?
Well, I think people will make their own decision. But I want to just say that if you think that Rebecca Bradley has left these opinions behind, her most prominent fundraiser is David Clark. You go back and look at what David Clark said when gay marriage was made legal in the United States 260 days ago. You look at the hateful things that he wrote about that and tell me if Rebecca Bradley has changed, if her top fundraiser is saying these despicable things.
Rick Essenberg.
You know, I think that people are tired of attacks. People are tired of smear campaigns. They're tired of our inability to debate issues without accusing other people of being racists or homophobes or unpatriotic, whatever particular slur matters the most to us. I think that when we consider the candidates in this election, I think that we have to place something that was written a quarter of a century ago in perspective. I think we have to look at the record that has evolved since then. I think we have to be careful not to conflate political disagreements with attitudes. I think we do have to look. You know, Scott called me out because for raising, you know, the "some of my best friends are gay" defense, and then he proceeds to turn around and tar Rebecca Bradley with David Clark. The fact of the matter is Scott wants us to believe the Rebecca Bradley would be unfair to gay and lesbian persons. Gay and lesbian persons who know her don't think that. I think that that's telling and that's important in evaluating this.
Rick Essenberg is the president and general counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Scott Ross is the executive director of One Wisconsin Now. When we come back, we are going to talk about other top issues in state and national politics, including the latest developments in the race for president, on this edition of The Week in Review here on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in state and national politics this week. We spent most of the program on the controversial writings of Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley while she was in college. Now let's move on to the race for president. Donald Trump tightened his grip on the Republican presidential nomination, but Bernie Sanders pulled out a surprise victory in Michigan. So maybe Hillary Clinton has not tightened her grip on the Democratic nomination. So let's start with you, Scott Ross. What's your overall impression of this week in the race for president?
Well, I actually think, you know, after having that spirited and respectful conversation in the last 40 minutes, that it is the point where Professor Essenberg and I are going to agree that Donald Trump would be a disaster for the United States, and he is taking the Republican Party down. And I sympathize with you. I do, Rick. I totally sympathize with you. The tiger has gotten out of the cage, and it has gone crazy.
Rick?
Yeah, it's interesting. If you want somebody to defend Donald Trump, you know, you'll have to get somebody else. I'm not going to do that. It's interesting. I was at CPAC over the weekend, which is a big sort of conservative meeting in Washington, D.C. I spoke on a panel, and it amazed me how many people there were. Everybody there was anti-Trump. Sort of movement conservatives and libertarians, people like me, we don't like him because, as far as we're concerned, he's really more of a Democrat than he is a Republican. He's authoritarian. He's a statist. He doesn't believe in the things that we believe in. You don't hear him talk about individual liberty. You don't hear him talk about living in government and free markets. So it is disappointing that he's done as well as he has. But I think his success is overstated. I think he's ahead because he's managing to get a plurality of the vote in a four-way race. I think as the race narrows, his path to the nomination may narrow. In fact, what's really interesting is if you actually look at the delegate numbers, if somehow he doesn't win either Ohio or Florida on Tuesday, he's probably done. He probably at that point does not have a path to 1237.
So there were debates on both sides this week. The Democratic presidential debate maybe had a little bit of a sharper tone. Let's take a listen to Hillary Clinton responding to a question whether she would step down if she were to be indicted over emails.
If you get indicted, would you drop out?
Oh, for goodness. That is not going to happen. I'm not even answering that question.
And on the other hand, last night in the GOP presidential debate, it was a little more civil. There wasn't talk about hand size or anything like that. But Donald Trump did double down on his statement that Islam hates us and went on to say this.
You can say what you want and you can be politically correct if you want. I don't want to be so politically correct. I like to solve problems. We have a serious, serious problem of hate.
I'm not interested in being politically correct. I'm interested in being correct.
So that was Marco Rubio, who really needs to do well in Florida if he's to stay in the race. Do you think he did well enough, Rick Essenberg?
No. And I say that with some degree of pain because, he's my candidate. But I just... I think that in this election cycle, he just didn't have what it takes. Maybe I'll turn out to be wrong. There's at least one poll that shows that, he's got a chance to win Florida. But My guess is that the race is really going to come down to one between Trump and Cruz after Tuesday, and my guess is that Cruz will at least win that, either win that outright, or nobody will have 1237 going into the convention. The convention will be open. If the convention is open, there's no way that Donald Trump gets the nomination.
Well, let's get Scott to respond first to the debates. And did Rubio do well enough, do you think?
I mean, honestly, I didn't watch. I did not watch last night's debate because I was so turned off by the last one I watched. And I think that's the real juxtaposition between what the two parties are doing, what the two sides are doing. The Democrats are having a spirited discussion about the issues that are facing this country. You know, are we going to fund infrastructure, the student loan debt crisis, public education, fair taxation, making sure people are held accountable when they do wrong? And the Republicans are talking literally about who has the biggest plan. Because I don't want to get accused of saying bad things. And that's, I think, the difference. I mean, people are being assaulted at Donald Trump rallies. Reporters are being assaulted by Donald Trump staffers. I mean, it is insane. And again, my sympathy goes out to Rick on this. And that is that you've got Donald Trump, which most of America can't stand, and you've got Ted Cruz, most of Republicans can't stand. And I think that's a real challenge that you have going in there. How after the convention and whatever happens there, are you going to be able to bring your party back together in order to win the general election? And I think there's a bigger challenge on the Republican side than there is on the Democratic side with that. But that said, you know, the Democrats are having an incredibly spirited debate. And, you know, if you'd have said a year ago that you thought Bernie Sanders was going to be in it this long and where he is at and just win Michigan, I think, you know, somebody would have accused you of, well, indulging in certain substances.
Well, you mentioned, Rick, that when we get to the convention, what's going to happen there, Paul Ryan, House Speaker Paul Ryan yesterday was telling the draft Paul Ryan for President group to cease and desist, that it's just not going to happen. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. If we do have, you know, people talk about brokered conventions. There's no such thing as a brokered convention because there are no brokers anymore. You know, Boss Platt died in 1912, so you know there's nobody that is going to control this thing. It's going to be a very spirited discussion, and I think it will be somebody who was in the race that gets nominated. It could be Ted Cruz. It could be John Kasich. But you know. It's an interesting point that Scott raises. He says, and I agree with him, that Donald Trump's negatives are really, really high. But so are Hillary Clinton's. Somebody pointed out a poll to me yesterday that said 60-some percent of the general electorate does not believe that they can vote for Donald Trump, but 56% believe that they cannot vote for Hillary Clinton. You know, it's the resistible force, meaning a movable object. Nobody can win. I think this is going to be a really interesting spring, summer, and fall.
Let's go to Charlie in Milwaukee. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I must say I'm a conservative who's feeling the burn because I'm looking for someone honest. And my comment has to do with the Democratic town hall the other day. And Hillary Clinton said that she never told a parent of one of the men who died in Benghazi that she never said it was due to the video, the Mohammed video that was being propagated. The story was being propagated at the time. I want someone who's honest. That's why you're getting people so angry. And I just can't believe that people are letting, you know, Secretary Clinton get away with right out lying about so many things.
Her trustworthiness is an issue, Scott Ross?
Well, I think like no one else. I mean, and again, not to go back to the original conversation we were having, but Rebecca Bradley has been enduring 96 hours of bad press. Hillary Clinton has been enduring 25 years of terrible attack press. Many things that have been proven absolutely false. And I think, you know, I'm going to use the B word. Benghazi was, the Republican assault based on that had nothing to do with finding out the truth, finding out the facts, making sure that our servicemen and women and our ambassadors are protected. They all but admitted it. You know, they admitted that this was a political witch hunt.
What do you think, Rick Hessenberg, of a conservative, our caller says he was conservative, who's feeling the burn?
Well, I don't know what he means by that. And certainly when it comes to candor and honesty, I'm not entirely sure that I want to give the accolades to Senator Sanders, who I think has essentially based his campaign on the notion that we can increase federal spending by 50% or more, and that we can make a handful of rich guys, you know, pay for it. His math doesn't add up. But, you know, he is pointing to a real problem with Hillary Clinton. And the fact of the matter is that she lied about Benghazi. She told her daughter, she told a diplomat that videos had nothing to do with it. At the same time, she was telling the American public that they did. And the reason that she was doing it, and this is quite clear, is that to admit otherwise would interfere with what was at that time the administrative's narrative that they had somehow destroyed al-Qaeda. People are bothered by that. And I think that she's going to have a very, very difficult time. And she's going to be the nominee. I think she's going to have a very, very difficult time. I hope that the Republicans don't hand her the election by nominating Donald Trump. I don't think that'll happen, but we'll see.
You know, President Obama yesterday said that the rise of Donald Trump is not his fault, but rather problems within the GOP. Rick, what do you attribute the popularity of Donald Trump?
You know, I think the popularity of Donald Trump is complicated. I think that there are people out there who believe that neither the Democrats or the Republicans care about them anymore. They think that that the Democrats are obsessed with some privileged minority, you know, not privileged but preferred minorities that they feel have been historically disadvantaged and need to be advantaged now. And government workers and Wall Street, I think, to some extent. At the same time, they think the Republicans are just concerned about, you know, rich guys and businesses, and that nobody is speaking for them. I think that Trump really is he reminds me of George Wallace. It's the same type of appeal, and it manifests itself in anger, and sometimes in policy choices that don't make a lot of sense. I think that the problem in the way in which President Obama has played into this is he has conducted a somewhat imperious presidency. He's said, I really don't care what Congress does or doesn't do. I have my pen, I have my phone, and if Congress doesn't write the laws that I want to write, I'm just going to make them up myself. I think that makes people, on the one hand, it makes people angry because it appears to be lawless and unfair. And on the other hand, it at the same time validates the notion that, you know, what we need is a strong man. And I think that there are other things that play into it as well. But I think he does have, I think he has played a role.
Scott?
Listen, the Republicans, whenever a Democrat is elected president, are an auto assault. Let us not forget that one of the most prominent figures on the evangelical right accused President Clinton of being a murderer, for God's sakes, when he was elected. They have demonized Barack Obama from day one. We know that as they were wheeling old man Cheney off the dais on January 20th, 2009, that Paul Ryan and the Republican leadership were conspiring, and their conspiracy was, let us forget about the nation, let us just block and stop everything and paralyze the government, and that will inevitably get us back into a power.
Former First Lady Nancy Reagan will be laid to rest today in Simi Valley, California. She died Sunday of congestive heart failure at the age of 94. Michelle Obama is going to be attending the funeral. President Obama is not. Many conservatives are saying that is disrespectful, Rick Essenberg, that the president is not attending the funeral. What do you say to that?
You know, it is. I think that at a time like this, and maybe it would seem less so if he had attended the funeral of Justice Scalia, I think... You know, it gets back to what we were talking about in the first half of the show. It's fine for us to have political disagreements, but it's not fine, you know, for us to, say things like, you know, old man Cheney, and it's not It's not fine for us to question the bona fides, the good faith of our opponents, and to make politics into something that's personal. And I think it's really sad that that the president isn't going to attend.
Scott?
Sitting presidents rarely attend the funerals of former first ladies. Simple as that. George W. Bush did not attend the funeral, for instance, of Lady Bird Johnson, for instance. There is a long, long record of that. This is, again, the rules for everybody else don't apply to Obama, according to the Republicans. That is the way it has been throughout his nearly 8 years in office.
We have many issues to go and very little time. I'm going to let a caller who's been waiting for some time bring up our final issue. Mark and Appleton, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, just the changes that the Board of Regents voted to weaken tenure yesterday are very, very significant. The University of Wisconsin is in really bad shape. We've taken an institution that was comparable to the Green Bay Packers in football, and we're rapidly turning them into the Cleveland Browns.
What do you say to that, Scott?
First of all, I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, so I absolutely agree with any disparaging remarks about the Cleveland Browns. The second thing I'll say is this. Yes, Governor Walker has systematically dismantled higher education in the state of Wisconsin for political gain. We have seen $1 billion come from the tech colleges in the UW system, an average of 40,000 eligible students be denied financial aid every year, tuition go up 11%, and let us not forget, absolutely ignoring the student loan debt crisis, where if you could refinance your student loan debt like you can a mortgage under the higher ed lower debt plan, you'd be able to get a heck of a lot of savings and a heck of a lot of spending back into the economy.
Rick?
You know, Wisconsin was very rare. States generally don't have tenure written into state statutes. They allow the rules regarding tenure to be set for public universities by the people who have the responsibility for managing them, and I think that that's the right way to go. And I think I don't think tenure was gutted. I think tenure was modified. I think that major research universities are going to have to offer tenure because the market is going to demand it. And so I think we'll continue to see that. I think that there may be other faculty roles in institutions within the system in which tenure is not that important, and you know, professors are, you know, basically going to be treated like most other employees in the economy, and you know, are going to have to you know, retain their jobs based both on their performance and the success of the institution that they work for.
We have a minute, so if you wanted, yeah. Scott, 15 seconds of that.
Listen, Rick pointed out exactly what it is. Governor Walker has put the rights of management over the rights of workers, every single thing, Act 10, right to work, what he's doing to the UW, and it's not creating jobs. It's a total failure, and it's divided Wisconsin.
You get 15 seconds on that, Rick Hessenberg.
There certainly has been political opposition to Governor Walker, but I think that these are the things that that you have to do in order to run an institution efficiently. I don't think the University of Wisconsin is falling apart. I don't think it will fall apart, and I think that getting too excited about the tenure changes is really a mistake.
We'll leave it there. All right. Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us. Rick Hessenberg, President and General Counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, blogger at sharkandshepherd.blogspot.com, and Scott Ross, the Executive Director of One Wisconsin Now. Thanks to both of them for being our guests on this edition of the Week in Review. We'll have more on state politics coming up on Monday on our State Capitol Report, every Monday from 7 until 8. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Elijah Ellison for producing the program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.